Hello everyone, welcome to Digital Marketing Gyan Podcast, your favorite podcast where we interact with eminent guests from the digital marketing world and try to understand the latest trends, techniques, case studies and updates in this domain. I'm your host Prince Kumar and today we will be discussing the best social media strategy for travel and food blogger with our guest Chef Dennis Litley. Dennis is a food and travel blogger and has been ranked among top 100 social influencers and top 25 travel bloggers in USA. He is the founder and CEO of Ask Chef Dennis Production, where he runs one of the most successful food blogs in the world. With over 1.8 million followers on social media and around 150 million views on Google profile, he has built a loyal following that uses his recipes and cooking tips to feed their family and friends, helping them bring the joy of cooking to their home kitchen. Hi, Dennis, a warm welcome on our show.
Well, thank you for having me on today, Prince. I appreciate that.
Great. So today's session will be definitely an exciting session for me and for my audience. I mean, I had a bit of love in traveling, and somewhere around 4 to 5 years back, I was even managing a blog. I used to keep a kind of the blog content about the travel journey, but somewhere I was not able to focus on it, and therefore I was not able to get some good results. So therefore, I'm sure that this session will be a lot of learning for me and also for my audience.
Well, good. I hope I can help shed some light on how I became a travel blogger and how I got a lot out of it.
Great. So Dennis, to start with our conversation, I would love to know a bit more about you and how your journey for food and travel blogging started.
Well, it was a long journey. I started when I was a child because I loved to eat. And my mom was a nurse and worked nights. So sometimes I had to cook for myself. If I wanted to eat, I had to get in the kitchen and make some food. So that kind of got me started on the right road. And then I always attribute one of the major factors in me becoming a chef to a guy named Graham Kerr, who was the Galloping Gourmet. And this was back in the late 60s, early 70s. And he was cutting edge. I mean, he was the first really TV chef, you know, other than Julia Child. And we did not appreciate her when she was on. So Graham Kerr would come out. He was Australian. He had that accent and he'd wear an ascot. And he'd bring people down from the stage to taste his food and they would moan. And I think that resonated with me, and that in the back of my mind made me want to become a chef. So that started the journey. And then over the span of my adulthood, trying to find different things that I was good at, I just kept coming back to food. And I started training to be a chef I was an apprentice in a restaurant and learned my craft. And then just kept moving forward, learning more, reading more, trying to discover what my specialties were and what I did really well. And that was a great journey, going across different restaurants and seeing how I could make people happy with food. And at the end of my journey, my body started to break down. I had carpal tunnel syndrome in both hands. I needed surgery in both hands. I went out and I went into management at that point. And I just couldn't sit in the office. No matter where I was, I'd see a problem with the food. So I ended up back in the kitchen cooking. So I went out for another carpal tunnel surgery on my right hand. And when I came back, my boss was gone. So, you know, I called him at home, said, what happened? He goes, I left the company. I went to this company. We run schools and I have a job for you. I'm like, oh, I don't want to go to a school. You know, my life is not over yet. But he said, no, go. So I went. It was an all-girls Catholic high school. Okay. And it was old and outdated with the kitchen. And I'm trying to think of a polite way to tell the nuns that, no, I'm not interested. And the president of the school goes, and you work 165 days a year. And without even thinking, my brain answered, when would you like me to start? because 165 days a year was like, oh my God, that's, you know, that's nothing. So I went to work at the school and just began transforming the school into modern techniques and equipment. And again, I was in management, and after a little while, I couldn't take how bad the food was. I started cooking. Okay. And the girls thought they had died and gone to heaven because I'm feeding them adult food, restaurant food, you know, and they were just loving it. They painted a mural of me on the wall. They loved it so much. They were just crazy happy. And about 3 years in, I decided I'd start a culinary program at the school and start training some of my own staff so they would be helpful when we had events instead of hiring people, outside people. And that's what started my blogging career. At that point, I decided blogging was new. This was 2009. And I'd heard about blogging, and I said, you know, I should start one. The girls can go there. They can get recipes. They can write to me and ask me questions. And none of them were having it. They just wanted to come in the office and see me. But people at the school started going to the blog, started reading my recipes. And then I started getting people all over the world that were reading them. I didn't have a lot of people, but I had people in Singapore and Australia and Germany and the United States. And I was going, wow, this is crazy. So I became a blogger that day.
Okay.
And I worked 3 more years at the school. And then just my body was just broken. And at that point, I had to retire and move to Florida. And when I moved to Florida, my full-time job became blogging. And that's when I discovered travel blogging, too. So I had been called the accidental travel blogger. A friend of mine sent me to a hotel that was having a promotion. I said, I'm not a travel blogger. They're not going to want me. She says, oh, no, apply. So I went. They were thrilled to have me because I had a huge social media following. And I was standing in front of these 9-foot sliding glass doors that opened to the ocean. In a pretty crappy room, but it had these beautiful doors they had just installed. And I'm looking at the ocean going, I can do this. If I write about it, they'll send me places. So I just started building it locally and going around Florida and then other states. And then I became international. I got an email from Viking Cruises, and that started my real push into it. And then other companies were hiring me and sending me all over the world. And I was just loving life. So that's kind of how the progression started. You know, me becoming a food blogger was not by choice. It was because I wanted to help the girls I was teaching. And me becoming a travel blogger was like just an accident. So it was a good, happy accident, though.
No, definitely, definitely. You know, the way you have completely transformed from being a kind of chef to then someone training about food, and then now, I know, kind of a renowned travel blogger. So the transformation has been amazing. The journey has been amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's been a lot of fun. And I think that's been the key to my successes. You know, there was an old saying, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And I mean, I put in 8-10 hours a day, almost every day. But I'm happy doing it. It's a joy. I love to cook. I love to help people learn how to cook and how to make things. And I love talking about my travels. And my travel niche was culinary travel too. So it was a little different. Like I'd get called, like one time this guy wrote, oh, he went to 8 UNESCO sites and didn't mention any of them, but he said all the good things he had to eat. And I was like, well, yeah, they know those sites are there, but they don't know what they can eat. We'll eat there.
Perfect. Okay. So you know, briefly explained about your journey and then how you shifted towards the blogging and then towards the social media. So since you mentioned about your blogging, also, what was the time when you realized that you need to be a bit more active on social media? And can you just help us know about it?
Yeah, it was towards the beginning. You know, I think I was on social media, but I wasn't very active. And then I would be on, and I had such a small following. I had started too late, and my friends and other bloggers had these big followings, and I'm like, I'll never catch up. And then I forget the year it started, but Google Plus came out.
Okay.
And Google Plus was like the big push for me. It was a level playing field. Nobody had any followers. It was all starting from the beginning. So I just beat that social media to death. I was on there all the time. And it was easy because the people I were meeting, they were so cool and they were so interesting that I just really embraced it. And I started, I was Philadelphia at the time. I was living outside of Philadelphia and I was their social, I was their big user in Philadelphia. I was their power user.
Okay.
So Google rewarded me and put me on the follow page with Anthony Bourdain, Martha Stewart, Emeril Lagasse. And I'm there with all these big guns going, oh my God, how the hell did this happen? And that's when I started really amassing a following. And they left me on for a month and then they took me off. And I just kept working hard. And eventually I got back on the list through my own merit again. And I had over a million followers on Google Plus when they shut it down. And that pushed me up and it made me try to understand how to get a bigger following on the other platforms. So I started on Facebook and I started working the system a little bit. And I did do some advertising to gain some followers. I figured, you know, this is the plan. This is how you have to do it. And I just started amassing a bigger following. And then they started to change how they did things. And I was like, oh. So then I went to work on Twitter and I figured out how to use Twitter and I started growing Twitter. And then Instagram wasn't that big. So then I started pushing Instagram. And I just kind of took each one at a time. I don't have a big YouTube following. It was never my focus. But the other social medias were what was driving me. Pinterest. I hated Pinterest, so I hired someone to do Pinterest for me.
Okay.
And she really started building up my platform on Pinterest. So, you know, when I what I did was what I learned was I found something I didn't like to do or I didn't do well, I outsourced it. And I kept my focus on the things I did really well so I could grow, so I could do those things. So, you know, but I knew social media was important. I don't think I realized how important it was going to become. I started to see when Google started changing things and I started to see how people weren't watching long videos. I knew something was coming. I did not know it was going to be whatever was before TikTok. I don't even remember now, but you know, I knew something was coming. So, and people had asked me, it was like, whew, I think about 6 years ago about, cause I was one of the first real video people and live streaming back when I started. And I said, what do you expect? I says, no, I think video's dying. I think these long videos that we're doing are dying. People want small bite-sized things. Didn't mean I started doing them, but I knew what they wanted. So that was another reason I backed off of video a little bit, but yeah, it's just listening. You know, I had friends at that point, I had friends all over the world and I'd bounce things off of them and they'd tell me what they were doing and what they were seeing. So it was a matter of just assimilating the information and trying to figure out my best course of action. So that has kind of been good for me in that respect. I try to plot which direction I'm going. And then I retired. I got old and I said, oh, I just don't want to do all this stuff anymore. I was picking and choosing what I wanted to do.
Okay. So you mentioned you were kind of actively involved on Facebook and Instagram, Pinterest, Google Plus was when it was, was active. YouTube, you did not prefer just because it's a kind of long-term video or because of some other reason?
The first time I did not go to the short videos because they were disappearing. Snapchat made absolutely no sense to me. My mind couldn't understand why you would post something that would disappear. You know, it was like, why do all this work for not having content that you can't? And at that point, there was nowhere to repurpose it. You know, now there's all kinds of places to repurpose short video reels.
Yeah.
Pinterest has their idea pins. There's all kinds of places you can do things. But then it was like, oh, and I think that soured my focus on videos a little bit. And now I'm trying to get my mind back into that genre. I bought 3 new cameras to do some video work with, so I know I need to go there. My granddaughter keeps telling me, you know, you got to be on TikTok. You know, I'm like, okay. You know, I wish she was a little older and she could just make the videos for me, you know. But I know short, and I know that's where people are going. So the short bite videos with Reels and with TikTok, I'm sure another platform will emerge and people should really be ready. That's where you need to go. And for businesses, it's the easiest way to get noticed because you don't have to spend a lot of time doing videos. I have restaurant people that I talk to. I says, you know, just get your, use them, make them with your phone, pass your phone to your other people in the restaurant, let them make short videos, post them to TikTok, post them to Reels. It's free advertising. You know, you couldn't get better advertising than these little videos do. You know, even on Facebook, you know, post them to Facebook. It's just, you're missing an opportunity, whether you're a blogger, a business owner, you know, or someone just trying to get more notice, a writer. You know, if you write books, it's still a good place to be seen and to get heard and to have people find you.
No, that's perfectly fine. And that's the best thing that you have mentioned it, definitely, that if we are working with short videos, there are a lot of platforms where we can repurpose. So it's, you know, if you see the effort, so you are taking a kind of, let's say if you go for 2 to 3 hours, effort will be done. But then if you are repurposing in on many platforms, you have those platforms as an opportunity to have increased outreach and increased engagement with your audience.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why one reason I'm trying to wrap my head around doing them more. And we just moved. I always seem to find an excuse why I'm not doing them, but we just moved. And once the house gets more set up, I'm really going to try and get myself to do these videos. And I have a few on TikTok. I don't have very many. But that's one thing I always tell people, too, is when you start any kind of business, a blog, to go to all these platforms and get your name right away. Secure. Find a name that's easy to remember and that you can get on all these different platforms. So like I'm Ask Chef Dennis everywhere. It's really easy. You know, and I, as soon as something opens, I don't care if I'm going to use it or not. I get my name just so it's secure. And someone else can't be an imposter and try and work off everything I've built too.
Perfect.
But yeah, you know, short-term video, I think that's really where it is. And you know, I still think that, you know, the other social media are important. And I think you need to stay active on them, maybe not spend all your time on them, but you need to keep a broad base. And one thing I tell people too is, you know, social media is free advertising, but don't expect it, I think with the exception of maybe TikTok, to drive traffic to your blog or to your business. You know, business, a brick and mortar business or a restaurant, I think it will drive traffic, but a blog, it's getting interest, it's getting people to notice you, it's getting your name out there, it's putting you in their minds. But like from Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, you're not going to get a lot of traffic. You're going to get a lot of views, a lot of likes and things like that, which is good if you're working with brands, because that's what brands are looking for. Like I get a lot of my sponsored work because of the engagement I get on my social media, but it's for that. You know, Google is what you want to work if you want traffic. You know, you need to do what Google says. You need your SEO to be in line. You need how you write and how you present things to be in line so you can get in search.
Perfectly. So although you have highlighted few of the important strategy, but if you can highlight few more key social media strategies that have worked for you and that have given a good result. So if you can share a few of those strategies, it will be very good.
Sure. Yeah, well, I think the strategy I have is when I create a new post, when I create a new recipe, I may not immediately share it to social media. I may let my mind wrap around what I've done and then maybe a week later start to share it on social media. Let me decide how I want to present it and how I might want to change the pictures or make a, you know, you don't even have to take real video. You can do a picture, like almost like a PowerPoint presentation, basically with the different slides of your pictures for a quick reel or something. But then you decide how to repurpose it. And then it's an all out blitz. And then it goes, like I said, it goes across all my different social media. Now, what I use to help push my social media is there's a lot of groups on Facebook. and you get in these Facebook groups that can help you share your Facebook posts, help you share your tweet, help you share your Instagram posts. Now, this is where it can get very time consuming. So at that point, I would hire a VA to go in these groups and to help share them across different medias.
Okay.
I use Buffer. Buffer's really easy for me for some of them. But that's where you take advantage. Now, I've had bloggers say, oh, you're gaming the SCIS system. You know, that's not real engagement. I've already said that social media is for advertising. Okay, we're not talking about getting traffic to your blog. So if a brand hires me, my job is to get them the most exposure I can humanly get them. If I can't do it just with my words and my pictures, I can do it with all the friends I have across different social media. By pushing their stuff, they push mine, and it's a win-win for everybody. And then, you know, more people get to see it. Like, there was at one point I was getting like 25 million impressions a week on Twitter, which was insane.
Amazing.
It was insane. You know, it's just, and that's because other people were sharing it. So you go in these groups and you drop your tweet in there, and maybe you have to share another 40 tweets, but you're going to get an amazing amount of people seeing your post. And that's where you tell, that's where the brand starts to understand that it's eyes on it. We have, in the United States, we have billboards on all of our highways. And I tell people, that's that billboard you pass every day. You're seeing it. It goes into your mind. So when you go to buy something, you don't know why, but you reach for that product. Yeah. So it's helping build that awareness about it. So that's like the biggest social media strategy, is to use these groups to help really push your post, you know, to get some comments. Because we all know, like, when you do a post on Instagram, the first hour is the best push it's going to get.
Okay.
After that, it slows up. So if you can time it, so some of these groups have specific times when they do shares, and they'll do 25 shares in an hour, you know, and that'll help get it seen more and more. And again, staying with the times, I think I go on Instagram now and half the posts I see are reels. They used to just be static pictures. And now I see a lot of reels in the stream.
In the stream, yeah.
So, yeah, so start, you know, you have to follow it. If that's what's working, start posting reels. You know, they don't seem to get the likes or the comments, but you'll get, like, you know, I saw one that had 25 likes, but it had 8,000 views. So I'm like, oh, that's pretty good, you know. So you have to kind of balance it and see how you can push that out. I think Facebook is a necessary evil, but unless you pay to advertise, and I do, when a brand hires me, I include an amount of money that I spend on advertisement. Yeah, that's part of my budget. So if I tell them I want, you know, X amount of money for a post, usually 7 to 10% of that is for advertising. So, and that's the biggest bang for the buck. So I do it on Facebook, and then I target the audience that I want. It's very important to not let Facebook decide. You want to target the specific audience. I don't pay to advertise on any other platform because you don't get very much in return. Twitter doesn't give you anything. Pinterest doesn't give you anything. Instagram is still kind of iffy, even though Facebook owns them. You don't seem to get as much from them. But so the strategies are, figure out how you can get your content seen the most, you know, and that's really where you want to go.
Got it. And what about TikTok? Since you mentioned you have started working on TikTok also. So what about, how do you see video content on TikTok?
Well, you know, again, I'm still new at TikTok, but I think it's a matter of posting regularly and posting even more than once a day. So maybe taking, you know, when you're shooting, I think it's important, like when I'm going to start to create videos now, I'm going to use multiple cameras so I can get different kind of shots from on the same content. So if I'm cooking, I'll have one square shot or one rectangular shot, and then the upright shot with my phone for TikTok. So you want to try and get those different repurposes. With the time constraints, you can actually make more than one video out of what you're recording. So you just have to be smart about it. And again, if you don't know how to do it, find somebody that does. Like, I will probably hire someone that really knows TikTok well once I'm ready to get on the platform and engage, because I don't know it. It's not my genre. I was at a conference, and this was when Snapchat was big, and I'm at a conference, and these two, I think they were like 19 or 20 year olds, come out on stage, and they start saying, in our experience, and I'm going, experience? I've got clothing older than you. And then all of a sudden I went, you know something? I had to learn social media. Social media has been their whole life. It's been there. That's all they know. And then I started listening and I said, wow, they really know what they're talking about. It was a whole different perspective, but it's something that they grew up with and they have grown with, whereas I had to unlearn all these things and then try and relearn new things. And get my mind to accept, just like I said, I couldn't get Snapchat, you know, but they got it. So I will hire someone who's young, who knows TikTok, and then they'll tell me what they need me to give them. I'll give it to them and they'll run with it.
Perfect. So you have given a lot of insight about social media. Now, along with social media, have you been on any other platform, or have you taken support of any other platform to increase your influence? Like when I say other platform, it can be the blog, podcast, having a collaborations, magazines, or any other medium that you have utilized?
I think I have been on magazines. I've been in a few books. Podcasts are new for me. And actually, I started doing podcasts at the suggestion of my SEO guy. He said that my backlinks were stagnant and I needed to get out there more. So I started doing podcasts and I found I really enjoyed it. Not to the point that I want to start my own podcast, but I like being a guest because I just get to come on. You do all the work. I get to come on and talk and have a good time and get the benefit from it. But I think podcasts are starting to have an effect. With how I'm getting more readers. I just started using a platform and I'm still not sure, but it's driving traffic, called Whisk, which is a recipe platform. You know, there's always been something out there that you could put pictures on or you could put recipes on. Yumbly was one of them, you know, different things. So depending again upon your time, or if you hire a VA that can get your stuff out there for you, and you can concentrate on what you do well, those platforms will drive traffic. I have not found any that drove a substantial amount. And honestly, I would never want them to be the biggest source of my traffic. Google has got to be the number one source of my traffic. Direct traffic should be number two. And then number three can start with social media. Pinterest is number three for me. And Pinterest is really kind of like a search engine, although they keep screwing with it. So after that, then you can start filling in with social media, but that should be 5 to 10% of your overall traffic. That's it. Because if one of them dies, you're not going to be on the ledge getting ready to jump. You're going to be going, that's okay. You know, I'm with Google. Google's giving me 75% of my traffic. If I lose Google, then I'll be on the ledge. But you know, other than that, so try different things. Don't let anything take up too much of your time. And if you can hand it off to someone else to do. But just, I always advise, you know, if you're a blogger or a content creator, you know, magazines are great. They get you a good backlink. TV shows are great. I've been on some TV programs. They give you a good backlink and people love to see that. Cookbooks, you know, they've been asking me to write a cookbook for years. I just don't want to invest that much time to do it. Because you really don't make much money anymore, and it's just a matter of ego, basically. You know, I'd like to have one, but not that much. I think just being present on social, letting people see your face, letting them know it's important for them to connect with you and for them to like you, because people do business with people they like. No matter what the business is, if they like you, they're going to come back. If they know you, they're going to come back. So it's creating that persona that people will like. You know, that's one thing with podcasts. More people are hearing me talk and they're going, oh, he seems like a pretty fun guy. I'm going to go look at his recipes. You know, so that's what you want to portray. You want to be present, be likable, be honest, and be authentic. You know, be yourself. Don't try to be someone that you're not.
Perfect. So, yeah, you have given, you know, kind of yet another few advices. Now, for the chef or let's say the travel bloggers to whom you were giving a kind of few of the advices. So for any chef or any traveler bloggers who is into their profession, but somewhere they have not started their marketing activities to brand themselves, what would be your advice to them?
Well, branding should always be who you are. You know, I got very lucky when someone early says you should be Ask Chef Dennis, because I was always answering questions about stuff. But, you know, if you are in it, if it's the budget traveler, if it's the luxury traveler, whatever that niche is, you should try and own it. You should try and be that. You should try and work that in as your persona. As a chef, I think just using your name is good. You know, you can steal mine, Ask Chef Robert, Ask Chef Thomas, you know, whatever your name is, or Chef Robert Presents, or Chef Robert Cooks, you know, or, you know, something like that. But always try and use your name in it. Don't get too cute. Don't use underscores. Don't use hyphens. Don't use things that are hard to remember. Keep it short and to the point that's easily remembered. That's your brand. And then try and find a designer that'll get what you're thinking. And it may not be the first designer, maybe the third or the fourth, but you have a picture in your mind of how your brand should look, how your logo should look. Get three or four people to design something for you and try. And it might be combining two of them. It might be getting someone to change something, a color. Make sure your colors are right. Make sure they portray how you feel. They should be warm. It should be inviting. So your branding is, it goes down to the fonts that you use. And then I see some people get crazy and they pick these fonts and then they start a blog. And guess what? Google doesn't like those fonts. You know, so you have to make sure they're fonts that Google likes. You have to. I had a travel blogger friend that said she was getting no traffic. Google hated her. What's wrong with me? I went and looked at her site. And the first top third and more was one picture. It was a beautiful picture, but Google had no idea what she was writing because it was a picture. And it wasn't, so she wasn't, they weren't sending anybody because her articles would appear below the lower third and they weren't seeing them. They weren't seeing enough of it to even be interested in it. And I told her and she was offended because she loved that picture. I, okay, that's fine. You just go right ahead. You just asked me. I told you. Sure. So branding has to always take into effect what Google wants. And I used to have all kinds of things on my blog, Instagram pictures and all these other pictures. And they were unnecessary. I always call them, they were more for me. They were for my ego to show, look how good I am. Look what I have on this. Look what I have on this. Rather than give the people really what they're looking for, just the food. You know, they want to see the food. They want the recipe. You know, let's cut all this nonsense out.
Perfect. So yeah, these were the advices that, you know, any chef or any travel blogger, if they have to start, then definitely having a powerful content is one of the important things that you have tried to highlight. Now, since you have seen a lot of success into your social media, definitely while trying, there might have been some or other minor mistakes or, you know, the attempts that you did, but that were not successful. Can you help us with some of those marketing attempts which you did, but somewhere they did not, you know, were able to give you the desired result?
Well, Instagram is probably the biggest example, because when I started, I was all about food. And when I started traveling and I started posting my travel pictures on my blog, they would die. People didn't want them. They wanted the food. And I'd post this beautiful shot of me and it wouldn't get any engagement at all. So I started a second Instagram account. I started Chef Dennis Travels because I had all these beautiful pictures I wanted to share, but it was a different market looking for them. It wasn't the people that just wanted the food. They wanted the other people just wanted, I could put food on the travel ones and they would have done very well, but I couldn't put the travel ones on the food. So okay. Then when I put an occasional picture of myself on my food blog, on my food Instagram, it does really well because people go, "Ah, there's Chef Dennis." Then they're okay with it. But if I hit them with it all the time, they know. And it was the same thing in my email subscriber list. When I would send out travel posts on my email, they would die because people just wanted the food. So I think it's important to understand what your readers or your followers want. And sometimes you have to develop a different strategy and develop two different groups for them. On Twitter, I haven't done that because it seems most people that eat like the idea of traveling too. It works pretty well. Or I've developed enough of a following on each end of it that it works well. But some of the failures I've had was trying to put the wrong content on the wrong account.
Okay.
And trying to force it down someone's throat. And sometimes when a brand hires you, that's the problem too. Like, I'm very specific. I get offers all day. I could put all kinds of stuff on my Instagram account. But I think in the long run, it's going to hurt my account because people are not going to engage with it because it would just be for what they wanted to pay me. So I'm getting this one-time shot of money. But rather than doing that, I keep my Instagram clean and pure. And when someone wants to put something on, I just charge them more. So I may not be making the steady stream of small amounts, but I can get a larger amount when I'm true to what I'm doing.
Got it. So, we have been seeing nowadays that there are a lot of food and travel bloggers that have been emerging. Even when I say in India, I have seen a kind of in the last 1.5 to 2 years, I have seen a lot of travel and food bloggers that have been emerging, and they have been doing a lot of blogging for a kind of nearby cities, nearby areas, and these all things. So how do you see the future? And also, do you think that there will be any challenge that they should be prepared for?
Oh, there's always going to be a challenge you need to be prepared for. The problem is you don't always know what that challenge is going to be until it emerges. But building a strong brand, being authentic, and engaging with your readers. Remember the biggest thing about social media, the first word, social. Okay, it's not just about bragging about yourself. It's not me, 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 look at me. It's not like you go to a cocktail party and stand on the table and go, "Look at me, I'm here," you know? You want to do that, but you want to go, it's more like, "Hey, did you see what I just did? And what are you doing?" So it's social. Ask questions. You have to learn to engage with your people. So I think as social media continues, it's going to get a little bit more about that type of engagement. Again, it's going to be short bites. So you just have to get ready for whatever's coming. And don't complain. Don't sit there and go, "Oh, they changed it. I hate them. It's horrible. I'm not going to do it." Because what'll happen is it's going to pass you by, and all the people that are going, "Oh, this is pretty cool. Let me try this," are going to jump ahead of you. So I think the one thing that's always constant, and it's a kind of a joke, the one thing that's always constant is that things always change. Be ready to accept the changes, embrace the changes, be an early adopter. You know, it may not work, but if you're an early adopter, you can get so far ahead of your competition because you were there in the beginning. That can really increase your engagement and increase the demand for you, because there's so many people that are now influencers. You know, all you need is your cell phone anymore. It's not a lot of work involved. It's a pretty face and a cell phone, and you're an influencer. You know, I always tell people, it says, "I am too old to be an influencer. No one wants to look at this face anymore, this body." But, you know, you see all the pretty people becoming influencers and targeting products. I don't think they're going to last in the long run unless they really learn their business. And I'm not saying they can't. But if they're just so focused on "look at me" kind of attitude, they're not gonna grow, and they're not gonna last. It's gonna be short term. It's gonna be like we used to call in the music industry, a one hit wonder. You know, they'll grab a lot of cash, and then all of a sudden they'll just disappear. So you have to, if you're in for the long game, if this is what you want to do with your life, you have to have short term goals, long term goals. And as you reach that long, because I have reached my long-term goal, I never thought I would be doing this. I never thought I'd be this successful. So I've reached my long-term goal, so I have to make a new one. And as you get closer to that, you know, you want to make them a little harder to get. But you always have to strive to move forward. Okay. Once you stop moving, it's over. You might as well just watch your traffic go down and down. You always have to be present on social media. You know, you always have to write that next article or take that next picture or do that next post and stay ahead of things. And again, the big part of that is loving what you do. You know, like people ask me how I decide what I'm going to cook. And I tell them, I cook what I want to eat. That's what I put on my blog. The foods that I want to eat, that's what goes on my blog. You know, it's like, you're not doing keyword research. I says, well, yeah, after I decide what I'm going to make, then I do the keyword research. But I don't go on keyword research and say, what will rank high? I'll make that, you know. I decide what I'm going to eat. And then after I make it and cook it and take the pictures, then I go into keyword research and go, okay, what'll help me rank? But you know, 'cause I'm not stupid, but I want to make things that I know people are going to like to eat. And from my experience in the restaurant business, I kind of have an idea, or if there's something new I want to try, that's what I want to share and let them know. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you know, and more times than not, you know, it does. But yeah, again, you just got to keep moving. You know, don't think that you're at the top ever, because as soon as you think you're at the top and you slow up, someone's going to pass you by.
Perfectly. And also the content, or, you know, kind of the thing that you're mentioning upon. So we should be focusing more towards having a unique content, or a content that is useful for our audience. Definitely, because there has been a lot of platforms. There was, you know, when we were into initial stage, there was Orkut, MySpace, or these were the other platforms. Now no one is looking into it. Similarly, we are seeing that Facebook is also seeing a bit drop in their traffic and into their audience. So if we are focusing on platform, then definitely we might have to worry. But if we are focusing more towards the content that we are generating, then if, let's say, today we have Instagram, TikTok, or any other platform that come in the future, we will not have to worry about that, okay, you know, how I have to adopt that. Because I know that my content is strong, people will be liking it, and then that will be helpful.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it comes down to, like, I write my post and Yoast hates them. Yoast basically tells me I don't know how to write. And you have to ignore that, because I said, well, I must be doing okay, because people like to read what I write. So you can't always let someone tell you how your voice should be, as long as your voice is consistent. I mean, there's all kinds of people out there, and some will come to you because of your voice and how you write things. You know, and I've had brands come back and say, well, you should say it this way. And I says, no, I can't say it that way, because that's not how I talk. You know, and people are used to it. And once you start doing it somewhere else, your readers know. They'll go, oh, that's not him, or that's just an ad. So, it's being yourself. It goes back to being yourself, and you're basically, you're selling yourself. Think of yourself of trying to make as many friends as you possibly can. You know, that's what you're doing. You're making friends, people that'll trust you and read your content or listen to your podcast or read your article somewhere else. You know, it's those are the people you want. Like, I keep ad guys go crazy when I tell them that. I keep taking people off of my subscriber list. If they're not active, I cut them. I just delete them. And I had a couple guys gasp the other day because I said I do that. It says, oh yeah, I could have a subscriber list of about 30,000 people now, but I'd have an open rate of maybe 4%. I said, I got a 10,000 subscriber list with an open rate of 70%. I said, which would you rather have? You know, I want the 70%. I want screaming fans. I want people that wanna read me. If they're going to open my emails, you know, and then I just keep building those up. So if it takes me 10 more years to get up to 20,000, well, I'm okay with that, because then I'll have 20,000 screaming fans.
Yeah. Buff. So although you have given a lot of advice, so any last piece of advice that you would like to give to the budding bloggers?
Yeah, just give it time. nothing worthwhile happens overnight. I mean, you'll see some bloggers writing content and all of a sudden they're the next best thing. That does not happen very often. And I tell new bloggers to get right about 20 posts, 25 posts before you really start sending your material out, start sharing on social media. I mean, you can just keep refining and write them and get good posts. But if you start sharing it when you have 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 posts, people will come to your website and they go, oh, they're brand new. There's not enough content here. And they may never come back, or it may take years to get them to come back. So you want to build up some kind of a library. You know, and it doesn't mean you won't, people won't find you or people won't read you, but before you start pushing yourself and selling yourself, make sure you've got something to sell, you know, and not just a little something. Make sure you've got a repertoire, you know, 25, 35, 40 posts, good posts that people are going to want to come back to. And then they're going to want to see what they're doing next. What are they doing next? You know, and then start gradually building. And I tell people too, you know, don't think you're going to quit your job tomorrow. Keep your job. Right? Learn your trade. It's like anything else. You have to learn that trade. You have to learn that craft. You have to get better at that craft. And as you learn it, you'll be writing new posts. You'll be adding more content. You'll be getting bigger. You'll refine. You'll go back to old posts and rewrite them a little bit or take better pictures. And then you'll start to grow. And then by the time you've got 10 or 15 years into it or 20 years into it, you can go retire to an island and they can just direct deposit your checks for you. And yeah, then you can just write and have a good life. That's what I tell them. Play the long game. You know, you'll start to make money and good money, but then play that long game. For your retirement. Yeah.
Perfect. This was, you know, a valuable advice that you have given. So with this, we have come to this amazing episode. Thank you, Chef Dennis, for sharing these valuable advices with us. The tips that you have shared will help the content creators in the travel and the food industry get an extra edge somewhere compared to their competitors. So thank you once again, and I look forward to have you again on our show.
Oh, thank you very much, Prince. I had a great time talking with you, and I hope I gave some value to your readers.
Definitely. There was a lot of valuable feedback, you know, valuable advices that you have given that if we can implement, that will help us a lot in getting that brand or getting at least a bit of proportion of the branding that you have received for our blog. Thank you so much.
Good. You're welcome.